Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I'm Zach Burchie, and back in the co-pilot's chair for the first time in a little bit is Justin Savakis. Hey, Justin.
Howdy.
How's it going, man?
It's been a crazy week. We're working on a new studio tour, which are always fun after they're made, but when they're being made, they're pretty much hell.
Yeah, a lot of editing required on that, right?
Well, thank God I'm not the one doing it this time, because the last couple studio tours we did, it took me over a year to crank them out because, you know, I'm sorry, Japanese is my second language and only barely.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have to edit long discussions, long interviews with old men that talk like old men,
mm-hmm.
it's almost impossible to figure out what you're doing. So we're getting our guy in Japan, Heath, to do it this time. But, you know, as always, it's, you know, we're presenting a Japanese studio. And so obviously they're really concerned that they're looked at in the best light. So there's all sorts of back and forth that goes on when we make these things. And once it's done, it'll be great. But right now we're in the trenches.
Ugh, yeah. I mean, those things, you're always super proud of them when they come out, but
oh yeah, it's making sausage.
Yeah.
It's totally making sausage.
Oh, that's cool. So, have you seen any movies lately?
Not much. I just saw Tree of Life.
Oh, I have not seen it yet, and I'll tell you why. And this is the nerdiest explanation I've ever given, because I've had people asking me whether or not I've seen it yet.
Okay.
And I will tell them it's because the only place it's playing in Orange County is a little art house theater that has a terrible, terrible projectionist, and they're not using digital projectors. So if I wait for the movie to open at my local theater, they specifically have 2D-only projectors where there's no 3D filter on the projector, you know, because the 3D filters are what darken the image.
Yeah, they dim it horribly.
And the big reason to go to a Terrence Malick film is to stare at the beauty of it all. So I want the crispest, brightest possible image, and I have to wait until it comes to my local theater to get that.
I can't blame you.
That is why I have not seen it yet. But are you even a Terrence Malick fan?
You know, because I've spent so much of my life watching anime, there are huge gaping holes in my live-action movie viewing experience, and his entire filmography fits neatly into one of those holes. So this is actually my first Terrence Malick movie, and I love it.
Okay, great. Watch his other stuff, because you're going to like that too.
So I'm told.
Yeah, that surprised me, because the kind of stuff you like the contemplative, vague,
navel-gazing.
Yeah, that kind of thing, and that's pretty much all of his films. I love it. He's a master. But yeah, I can't wait to see that. I'm glad to hear
it's totally worth it. I spent the extra $6 and went and saw that at the ArcLight, and it was totally worth it.
Nice. Yeah, it's one of those things. Every time you say, "What is it about?" and it's like everything.
Yeah,
well, it's about life.
In general, it's more or less the American experience through the eyes of what I guess could be called the stereotypical American,
right?
You know, and it's a very deep interpretation of that one person's space in the universe.
Yeah,
I guess that's probably the best way I can describe it.
Sounds like fun.
I'll be honest, it's not for everyone. If you get this movie, if you enjoy this movie, I have respect for you as a film aficionado.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's you know, whenever my mom will sometimes hit me up for movie recommendations, and there have been on occasion I think about maybe recommending like Days of Heaven or The New World or even like The Thin Red Line. And it's like, God, these movies are not for everyone. They're for film nerds.
Yeah.
Like, oh, specifically for film nerds.
I tried, because my parents, they took me to like the Detroit Institute of Arts when I was a kid. They were I went and saw Run Lola Run with them. They're very open-minded people movie-wise. So I thought, one time I would try really test them, and I recommended them Afterlife.
Oh, yeah.
The Japanese navel-gazing about death movie that is mostly old people telling stories to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great, great, great film. One of my all-time favorites. And they called me and they're like, what is this movie you recommended to us? We watched it with our friends and we wanted to die.
Yeah, yeah. But Terrence Malick, not for everybody. And it's funny to see movie critics, the ones who get it, are very resentful of the ones who don't. Because it's like, it's like you write about movies for a living and you can't appreciate this. Like, what the hell, dude? But I've been doing the summer movie track as usual. I saw Super 8, which was okay.
I've never been less interested in seeing a big, well-made family movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's what you can say for it. I mean, it is a Spielberg cover band. It's a cover band version of a 1980 Spielberg movie by J.J. Abrams. And it's weird. This is my reaction to it was weird because I agree with, in equal measure, both the positive and the negative reviews. It's a deeply flawed film that is executed very well. But the script is just, it falls apart in the third act.
I'm going to say right now, having seen very little about this, but what little I've heard, I know for a fact I will hate this movie.
Oh, you would hate it.
I didn't like E.T. when I was a kid.
I haven't tried to watch E.T. Well, no, I tried to watch E.T. recently. It was on some HD channel.
Like, mommy, this has false soppy sentimentality.
Yeah, wow, man, you would hate Super 8. Like, I can't think of I can't think of someone I would recommend it to less. It's just looks, yeah. But I mean, I like that sort of 80s Spielberg look, and the first two thirds of it are actually a really sweet little movie about. Well, not the first two thirds. The first third of it is a sweet little movie about some kids trying to make their own zombie movie, and that would have been a good film if that had been it. They didn't really need to insert all the other shit. It's like two different movies sort of awkwardly stapled together. And one of them is interesting and the other one is boring and sort of predictable. But, I mean, at the same time, I can't say I wasn't very entertained by it. Like, I was never bored. I cared about the characters. The kid performances were really good. But yeah, you're the last person I would say go see Super 8. And there's not a ton on the horizon at this point. Green Lantern is apparently garbage. We still
have... Yeah. I've been reading the reviews with a big stupid grin on my face about what I'm not going to do this weekend.
Schadenfreude. I'm going to go see it tomorrow because I can't fucking help myself. But
God, it's a sickness, dude. It is.
But it's a fun sickness. I know I'm going to wind up going anyway, but I am actually kind of considering not seeing Cars 2.
I never actually bothered seeing the original because I just saw that and I'm like, you know, not for me.
I know it's a thing like, but it's Pixar. I want to see everything they do. I want to see everything they put out. This might be the one that I wait for the Blu-ray on, but I don't know. I'm conflicted about it. But in terms of anime, what have you seen anything lately?
I've been rolling in reissues.
Oh yeah.
Well, basically, last week was my birthday, so I just between gifts from family and just stuff I bought for myself, I bought probably, including box sets, about 20 to 25 discs in 1 week.
Wow.
And then Funimation sent me more.
Well, what'd you pick up?
Well, anime-wise, I finally got the my long-awaited reissue of Fruits Basket.
Oh, yeah. That's out on the shelves now, isn't it?
It literally just arrived an hour ago.
Oh, okay.
And I popped it right in, and man, the old Funimation discs of this show look terrible. I mean, not only was Funimation still doing their retarded, you know, every opening and ending have to have an alternate angle thing, which makes the entire show look like butt.
Oh, yeah.
But they were also cramming 7 episodes plus extras onto each disc.
Seen as revolutionary at the time.
Well, and mind you, this is one of those shows. It's an early DigiPaint show. It has a bunch of production problems. It was mastered on composite. It will never look great, but this is probably as good as this show can look. This new remaster looks fantastic.
Is that on DVD or Blu-ray?
DVD. If they had attempted a Blu-ray, it would not turn out well.
Yeah.
Like, there's stuff like dot crawl, and, you know, when they rendered, you know, pans and stuff, they forgot to turn on subpixel rendering, so there's, like, obvious notches everywhere.
Wow.
It's not something that has aged well from a production standpoint, but it's still a great show.
I don't think I ever got all the way through Fruits Basket. I should give that a shot. Maybe they'll send it along and I'll get a chance to revisit it. I think I saw, like, the first half or something like that. But, man, people lost their shit over that show back when it came out. It's been, like, 10 years.
You know what? I was one of them. I love this show. It's one of those that kind of burrowed its way into my heart, and I'm really happy to finally have a decent copy of it. Now, I do have one regret. When this first came out, Funimation released the first two episodes hosted by voice actors.
Oh, I remember that they gave it away at Suncoast, right?
Yeah, or I don't think it was giveaway, but I think it was like $4, which was amazingly cheap for a DVD back then.
Or free with purchase, I think. Yeah.
It was a big thing. And this, if you can track down a copy, it is the most chillingly awful, obnoxious, creepy thing that any anime company has ever produced in the name of marketing.
I don't know. I think that's a challenge.
Okay, I will give you, it is up there with every voice actor is doing things thinking they're entertaining and they're not. But this is by far the worst I've ever seen.
Wow. That's saying something.
Well, first of all, it's total amateur hour. It's shot at somebody's house, and without any microphones, so it's just, you know, a crappy camcorder mic. And so it's three voice actors: Laura Bailey, Eric Vale, and I forget the third one. And then there's a this young blonde guy who apparently is a is an audio engineer, but trying really hard to be wacky.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently this wasn't included. I can only guess what happened behind the scenes, but I'm sure that everyone who knows that this exists and was a part of this is just mortified that it's out there.
Yeah, so they wisely did not include it.
It's not included, and I really, really wish it had been, because it's so awful. I had to keep a copy around.
Anything else?
Well, just got... actually, Funimation just sent me their remaster of Samurai Champloo.
Okay, so this is the second Blu-ray release.
The second Blu-ray upscale. Right. And as we recall, the first one everyone complained about because they tried to denoise it for some reason, and it turned out all kind of blurry.
Yeah, it really didn't look good.
Now, this one, they fixed it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it looks good now. You can buy this. It's the Anime Classics re-release. It looks good. You can buy pretty much sight unseen. I mean, it's as good as any upscale I've ever seen. It's still an upscale.
Yeah. So, well, there's big difference between good upscale and bad upscale. So
this is a good upscale.
Well, that's cool. The only thing I got around to was High School of the Dead, which I reviewed. Bug hit me, and I was like, I'm going to review this. And admittedly, that show is garbage. But it's very entertaining garbage. And for the first like 8 episodes, I was genuinely wondering what's going to happen next. Not like I can't telegraph the plot from episode 1, but you get a little wrapped up in the characters and, you know, what's going to happen. And it's entertaining. I mean, it's garbage, but it's entertaining. It's about as anime as you could possibly get in terms of just being stereotypical anime.
I saw the first episode and the bullet time through the boobs.
Yeah, that's what pretty much everyone has seen. But it is a competent zombie story for the first two-thirds of the show or so. Inevitably, it slows down when they get to a safe house. And the last, like, 3 episodes, things really start falling apart. But I didn't hate it at all. I was sort of like, eh, all right, this is ridiculous. This is a ridiculous thing. But it's out on Blu-ray. The Blu-ray looks pretty good. It looks fine to me. There's no extras on it, which is kind of weird. But, you know, opening, clean opening and closing, which I'm not sure I count as an extra anymore. Like, if it's not there, what are they doing?
Yeah, at the same time, I'm not sure. I mean, this is a thing when it comes to, like, really kind of disposable, pulpy anime. I'm not even sure I really even care to have any extras.
Well, it's more in the sense that Section 23 ADV generally tried to put extras on things.
Oh.
You know, they did. They put effort into their packages. They wanted, you know, whatever they had, they had. I assume they just didn't have anything for this. Yeah, it's more like, they usually have something, but this time, nothing. So, I don't know. But, yeah, it's out there. I'm sort of looking forward to the summer season a little bit. I'm kind of curious about Bunny Drop, but...
I just got a promo for that. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, apparently the manga is very cute and realistic sort of look at raising a little girl and not creepy like that could potentially be for an anime. So, you know, that might be fun. Unfortunately, the summer season starts July 1st, and I'll be working.
Yeah, I guess where we'll be then.
Yeah, right. So our summer preview guide will not start until probably July 6th. So, yeah, that's just logistics. Everyone's busy during AX. But
man, that's going to be a marathon for you.
It happens every year now. I'm just used to it. I get home, I crash for about 10 hours, I get up, and it's summer preview. The good news is it's summer, so there's only, like, what, 12 shows, 13 shows? So it's not that much, and it generally ends after about a week, so...
Yeah, you also won't get the multiple-week delay that stretched out the preview guide for 4 weeks this time.
For a month, yeah. Oh, God. I was so happy when that was over.
But on the other hand, you're doing AX, and then the preview guide, and then Comic-Con.
Yeah, but Comic-Con is fun. It's barely work.
Yeah, that's your vacation.
Yeah, it's barely work. All right, cool. Well, let's go ahead and get to the interview. Okay, we're back. My guest this week, and I'm happy to have both these guys on the show. We've got Chairman of the Board of Directors and CEO of the SPJA, Mark Perez. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Zach.
And also coming back on the show for his second appearance. I had him on a little bit a little while ago to talk about music videos, but Michael Underwood, who is the director of the entertainment group for Anime Expo. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
No problem. So, guys, just a couple of weeks out here from the weekend, and I can't even imagine how busy the two of you must be.
2 weeks, 16 hours, and I think 20 minutes.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So
longer exists in our world.
So starting with Mark, describe, you know, what exactly it is you do. I mean, obviously that's a big title you got there. What do you do for the SPJA in regards to the convention, I guess?
Yeah, in regards to the convention, I'll try and skip over the board stuff, but essentially, I lead the team that really puts on Anime Expo. We have a lot of really great staff that make a lot of key decisions, but when they get to an impasse or need some executive-type decision that has to be made in regards to HR or budgeting or you know, working with what companies and how to help them out, they come to me. It's just a giant team, and I just happen to be the captain of the team. You can look at it like that.
All right. And Michael, you're a little bit more directly involved in the programming side of things, as I understand, in the tech side. Right. But do you talk a little bit about your specific duties at AX?
My specific duties are I oversee the guest relations group, they're basically who handle our guests of honor and do the invites to the guests of honor, manage their flight, take care of them while they're here, rather. Interpreters and such like that. I also oversee programming, which schedules all the programming for the video rooms, the LP rooms, etc. Here, let me kill that here. And then I also oversee tech, which is, you know, if it beeps, blinks, buzzes, or whirs, that's tech.
Right. So you're the guy who on the weekend has the 5 walkie-talkies in like a bandolier, running around with a panicked look on his face.
I don't know, panicked, but I'm definitely thinking about buying the bandolier. I'm thinking about getting one of those Star Wars Wookiee ones, you know, just shove radios down it.
There you go. There you go. So I want to talk a little bit about the show this year specifically, so we can sort of get the promotional side of this kind of out of the way. Okay. But what would you say is like the marquee event at AX this year?
Well, it's kind of hard to deny it. That would be the Hatsune Miku concert.
Right. This is fascinating to me, and it obviously stirred up a lot of attention. Just, I cannot even imagine, what are the logistics going into this thing? Like, how much input do you have? Do they have managers coming in and just telling you what to do with the stage, or what's going on with that?
Without getting too deep how the sausage is made, basically there's a committee in Japan that's called the Miku Fest team, and we're working with them to coordinate instruments, lights, video, where they want their cameras and stuff like that, and helping interface between them and Nokia Theater, as well as helping to arrange the rental of equipment and such. We're also working with them on ticketing to make sure, you know, how tickets are sold, how they're distributed, and just generally acting as a coordinator for a lot of it.
Right. So are you in the theater coordinating and, you know, overseeing exactly how it is they're setting this whole thing up?
Yes. With them there as well, but yes.
So this is a sold out event, to my knowledge. Now that's kind of amazing, but to my understanding, it's a block of seats. You're not using the entire theater?
Correct. Because of the fact that anyone who's seen, and if you do if you search around on the net, you can find it, or you can find references to it. But because she's a projected image onto a board, there's a viewing angle, optimal viewing angles involved. So because of these optimum viewing angles, we're not selling the seats to the far right or to the far left of the stage.
Right.
Because anyone sitting there would look over and, you know, see it's kind of like when you're looking at a reverse projection screen off angle.
Right.
It looked like that. And it just would not, even with the giant LED walls in there, it wouldn't be the optimal viewing experience. So the Miku Fest team stated, you know, because of that, because they want every fan to be able to get as good a view of her as possible, they ask that we not sell those seats. Also, on one side, they're bringing in a giant crane camera, so that kind of takes out a bunch of seats too.
Yeah, like I'm sure most people who are a little bit savvy about how this whole thing works understand that this is mostly promotional for their Japanese fans. They want here's a crowd of Americans cheering for Hatsune Miku, and look, she's big in America, you know.
Well, that's yes and no, because they're making a big push to bring her to the States and increase her American exposure.
Right.
And they're also, I mean, at its heart, Hatsune Miku is a character vocal pack for the Vocaloid software.
Right.
So at its heart, the bottom line is let's promote the character, but also let's promote the software and show what the software is capable of.
Yeah, even though it's completely taken on a life of its own at this point.
Exactly. Exactly.
So did they come to you? How did this even get started?
It was kind of serendipitous, actually. My deputy director, Joseph Kitzman, saw footage of the first Miku concert, which when she was on three screens, they had her on three screens and they were bouncing her between them I think it was an Animello performance 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And we're like, oh my God, we got to get that. That's just way too cool. It's like Gorillaz, only anime.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we started digging around on that. We weren't able to find much. Then this year, we had researched, you know, who the company was that owned her. We contacted them. We contacted, we found out that their CEO was going to be in town for NAMM, which is a National Association of Music. It's a big convention that features all the new tech and everything for the music industry that takes place here in Anaheim. So we were lucky enough to be able to arrange a meeting with him. We met, we talked about it. We're like, okay. This may happen, this may not, but we've made contact. Unbeknownst to us, their promotions guy or one of their promotional partners had contacted another member of our staff I said, hey, we really want to do this concert. Are you guys interested? And it just kind of, they told us and we're like, hey, we just met with this guy. Okay, let's talk. And it just built from there.
Now, before this opportunity came up, and it sounds like it was, like you said, serendipitous. What, I mean, do you ever struggle with, like, what are we going to get that's going to bring him in this year? Because there is sort of an increasingly fewer and fewer really big name Japanese guests that honestly will drive convention attendance. You know, it's hard to even think of, like, who are the superstars where a convention announces this person and everybody just loses their mind and suddenly your registration goes up, you know, 20% or something like that.
Right.
Was there a little bit of like, what are we going to do this year before the Miku thing came around?
Well, yes, there's that every year. We're always, like you said, we're always having to go, okay, what are we going to do that the people are going to want to see? They're going to bring people to our convention.
Right.
And before the Miku thing came up, we had, you know, a fairly strong lineup in mind. We were already working on our negotiations with Calafina.
Mm-hmm.
We were working on our other musical acts as well as other voice actors we were pursuing. And so we had an idea of what we were going with, and we had actually, to be completely honest, we had tabled the Miku concert till next year because mm-hmm. after our initial meeting, we thought, okay, maybe it's not going to happen this year. We'll try for next year. And then, you know, it just came the way it went.
That's good, because it might not have been as big a thing next year as it is right now.
Exactly. And it also, you know, it was literally, like I said, it was serendipitous also in the fact that here along comes Toyota. It was like, oh, yeah, by the way, we're promoting the new Corolla 2011 with Hatsune Miku. And we're like, really? You know.
Perhaps you've heard of our sponsorship packages.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be a good time for me to mention the Toyota Corolla.
Oh, God.
Is car of Anime Expo for 2011.
Jesus. All right.
You know what Mark does? That's it. That's a large part of it.
So in terms of what actually that's a good question. How much of your time is spent trying to lock down Mark? How much of your time is spent trying to lock down big sponsors?
We do dedicate a lot of time to big sponsors. We've been really blessed to have a great venue, LA. There's a lot of industry that's already in the area, both endemic and non-endemic, those in the industry and those outside. And we are not Comic-Con. We don't strive to be like Comic-Con, but we do think that we can offer a subset market that will appeal to certain companies. So as far as time dedication, a significant, maybe 25% of my job is probably dedicated to that. The majority of the rest of my time is really towards driving attendance and right. getting guest announcements and that kind of thing.
Right, right. When you're hunting down sponsors, do you just how wide a net do you cast? Do you go after specifically companies that you think might want to advertise to your demographic? And actually, what do you sell as the demographic of Anime Expo?
This is the terrible word of marketing, but it really is the best way to describe it, and that would be synergy. We like to approach companies that are really going to benefit from exhibiting at Anime Expo. So, you know, we approach sewing companies so that they might sponsor our sewing room that's new for the year, right? Okay. So Singer and is an example of one of those. We would approach Toyota because they're working with Miku to promote their car series. So obviously we want them to come to AX. Another one would be, you know, Dell or Best Buy. And we have them sponsor something more specific to the technical aspect, like the AMVs or a music compilation. Where they're using Dell-branded computers or Best Buy-branded products, that kind of thing. So we really want to stay inside of what I consider our wheelhouse. I don't want to go too far out. So what would be a good example?
For example, we're not going to go chasing after Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Marvel does produce, you know, obviously a lot of stuff that is in our same age range.
Actually, they're starting to produce some anime now, so we may have to pursue Marvel next year.
but we really just try and stay inside what we're comfortable with so that when an attendee comes in, they feel comfortable and they don't feel like, hey, wow, this is beyond marketing and it's really outside the scope of anime.
Right. They want to feel like they're at an anime convention.
Exactly.
Just a general purpose nerd fest.
Yes.
Yeah. So what, I mean, do you, obviously you guys know your demographic based on your attendance records. Yep. What age do you typically pitch to a sponsor? Like, what do you tell them? Who is the average Anime Expo attendee?
So the first place to start is we're 50-50 male, female. Mm-hmm. And then we go between 16 and 26, because we have so much of an attendance
for our primary. Yeah.
For our primary. We obviously have younger, a significant portion younger, and we obviously have older. But that's the general. 16 to 26 is what we look at.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'd say that's about right. I'd be curious to know what the metrics are on the East Coast and if it differs greatly from West Coast cons. So for this year, so Hatsune Miku is coming, and you guys have a couple of bands coming in. Bands are kind of the new, well, not really new, but bringing over Japanese bands has been kind of now the new staple for anime conventions, at least the big ones. They got to have a couple of J-pop acts, maybe even a couple of like K-pop acts. Is it getting increasingly harder to find bands that you think will actually draw an audience? Because a lot of these names, I got to admit, like, I'm not really into Japanese music. So I get the 800th press release saying, hey, some band is coming to some convention. And I'm just like, whatever, you know, I don't care. But is it getting harder to find bands that actually have a significant fan base, you know, and people are actually going to show up?
If I can kind of step back just a little bit, you hinted at the beginning of your question. So I'm going to try and answer the first part and then the second part. The board has really defined what the organization should be reaching towards in this year and in following years. We really want to focus on anime and manga. There are extraneous things that we are going to have productions for and put energy into, and that would be video games, music, fashion, cosplay.
Expanding to more of the actual Japanese culture as well.
More Japanese culture in the same kind of realm. That said, music kind of started in 2007 for us with Skin, where there was some before that, but obviously that was one where it was just a huge, oh my gosh, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And every year there's always a, who's the musical guest? Who's the seiyuu? Who's the, you know, the director? You know, everyone wants something. And we try to give the best of every class to our attendees. And lastly, for your question, it's always difficult finding a musical act that is relevant in the time frame that we're looking for and that has the availability to come out to the United States and perform.
Now, one of the big things we also look for in most of our musical acts, pretty much all of our musical acts, anytime an act gets presented to me, and it's like the first words out of my mouth are, what's their tie to anime?
Yeah.
You know, if they've got to have, now admittedly, in the past we've had one or two bands that have had very tenuous ties to anime at best, but we really push to try and make sure that, you know, it's a band who's done, you know, anime themes or, you know, openings or endings and stuff like that, or contains members who are voice actors, for example.
Another good way to put it, Zach, is that we obviously want the anime tie-in first. If that's not there, there has to be, and this is the best way to put it, the "Oh my God, this is a huge band" feel for them if we're going to bring them out at all.
So what else is happening at the convention this year? What's new? We all know about the Masquerade and the AMVs and all that stuff. What's new? What innovations do you guys have?
Okay, so there's quite a few things. First off, we always have our new stuff that we introduce New Year's and try them a year or two and see if it works. If not, we kill it. One of the first things is we have Center Stage this year. It's like a dance competition in the same thread as like America's Next Best Dance Crew.
Next Best.
ABDC. I'm familiar.
Yes. And Next Best besides that show.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, we're not going to step on them and take credit for anything that they've come up with, but similar style of competition.
And it's a lot of dance groups doing their routines to anime themes or to anime songs.
Yeah. So that's one. Two is we're doing a stronger film hybrid room. So not only are we going to have screenings of videos and film, there's also going to be a panel element to it as well. So creators of different series will screen their shows at AX, and then, hey, look, it's the director of that series on stage talking about it, and you just watch the whole movie. Similar to, you know, a bigger style convention feel. we're really trying to go after a full exposure of a release and get the 100 and the 360 on that particular release. So here's the movie, here's the director, here's the guy that, you know, came up with the music for it, and, you know, this is when it's going to be available for you to get. We're really trying to offer a stronger release in the United States for our Japanese counterparts that really want to push their stuff out to the United States, similar to what typically happens at Comic-Con, I guess is the best way to put it.
Right. Okay. So more of are you talking exclusive stuff that hasn't aired yet?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, we have a very big one this year of stuff that hasn't aired yet. You know, as I know you've announced on ANN, we've got the Last Exile 2 premiere. We're getting it months before Japan's getting it. We're going to be announcing it tonight in the AX Live. We've got key members of the production crew who are coming to Con as well.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the PR that has the exact name list. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. So now, is there anything in this that is maybe kind of designed to get your average convention attendee these days, which is a teenager, maybe a little bit more interested in the guys who come from the Japanese production side of things, because those panel rooms are sometimes a little less than half empty, but the English voice actors got a completely full room packed to the gills. Is there any sort of attempt? Is this kind of an attempt to refocus on the Japanese production guests?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the answer to that question.
But at the same time, we're also we're still trying. Adding the American voice, the American side of the industry was, you know, like voice actors and local directors and stuff, was originally an experiment. Fortunately, it's one that stuck because, like you said, you know, fill up. You know, we've got with a panel, you know, that's going to be wall to wall fangirls. But for we're trying to how to put it. We're trying to keep that, but we're also trying to, like you said, expand more of the Japanese awareness to the younger crowd. That's why we're starting to explore things like the dance competition, moving a little bit more into fashion-oriented stuff.
Real quick, Zach, I'm going to go through a couple things that we've added this year, and sure. If you have more questions about them, let me know. But I'm going to gloss over a couple of significant changes we've made for the year.
Okay.
All right. So first up, there's a whole lot of changes in the exhibit hall. First off, we have carpet this year,
which is a big
carpet.
Deal.
Which is a big deal. You might not think about it, but it's really quite funny for us. It's a huge expense to carpet a giant space like that.
Mm-hmm.
You really help that our exhibitors will appreciate it, and that people spend more time in the exhibit hall buying more product from those exhibitors that really do. You know, they suffer when people pirate, so we're trying to help them by giving them a better image in the exhibit hall. That's one. Two, we have an exhibitor lounge for those that are in the industry. They'll be able to sit and talk business, something new for us this year. We have a free after 3 for the exhibit hall. So if you come to the convention and you've never been there before, if you come at 3:30, you can check out the exhibit hall for free. All you have to do is stay in the reg line, quick pass, and you can go into the exhibit hall for free. For the remainder of the day. We have, it's just, you know, kind of gimmicky things that, you know, we want people to be able to check it out if they're general public but aren't willing to pay for a one-day pass yet.
Right.
We have, there's a couple of things. A sewing room for cosplayers so that they can actually sew on site.
If stuff breaks, repair station
kind of thing.
Which is something they've been asking for a long time.
Yeah. We are working on a changing room. It's not 100% locked in, but it should be not too difficult for us to finish up on. We're doing a dance-only pass for those that want to just attend the dance. It's an option. You don't have to pay extra for it. It's just an option. It already comes with your standard 1, 2, 4 premiere pass.
Right, but if you want to go to the dance but to see a particular DJ but don't want to pay for the kit for the con pass, you can get a dance-only pass.
Yeah. But all in all, as a slightly gimmicky thing, you know the step and repeat signs that are behind all of the LP rooms in major conventions? It's the backdrop.
Yeah.
Most conventions, anime conventions, don't doing that. That's something we're expending money on this year. it gives a different feel to the panel, and it gives a different feel to the room because it seems more official. It seems more, I guess, heady is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, it's very Comic-Con-y.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that all sounds pretty interesting. I like the idea of letting people just into the exhibit hall after 3 o'clock. That's kind of cool. I don't know that I've seen anyone else do that. Okay, well, that all sounds pretty good. I want to ask this. A lot of anime conventions, especially mid-sized, smaller ones, there are kind of moving away from being anime conventions. You know, you look at the programming list, and half of it is How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse, or, you know, yeah, stuff like
that's
that.
Important stuff to know, man.
Generic, yeah, it's like generic nerd stuff. As though anime itself is just not enough to get people to line up for, you know, and pay $45 to spend a weekend with your buddies, you know, screwing around in the anime screening room or whatever and going to panels. Has there been any push? Have you guys experienced any push either from attendees or within the staff to move in that direction, to go a more general purpose nerd thing?
Actually, the opposite.
Yeah.
Among the staff, we've been there are a lot of us, myself included, who are very much we're anime manga first and foremost. And that is our core focus. We're not trying to become Comic-Con. We're not trying to become generic nerd .0 con.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I just gave somebody a con name.
Probably already exists.
You know, that is our core focus.
And that's really the same view from the board's direction is we've kind of expanded over the years to cover some things because we have a lot of programming space available.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said before, our real focus is anime and manga primarily. But we do want to capture the other Japanese culture type things with the cosplay, fashion, gaming, that kind of thing, music. But our real core is anime and manga. And this year, as well as the next couple of years, we're really hoping to keep that as our focus.
So are you – okay, so every year and year over year, the last couple of years, AX attendance has been – not exactly exploding. It's been a little flat in terms of growth. Are you projecting another growth year this year? Maybe, you know, a 2%, 5% increase, more than that? What's your expectation?
So last year was flat, if not a little bit in the wrong direction, quite frankly. There's two things that I will address that I don't know that you remember, but one of them is we switched to turnstile attendance numbers. That's largely how larger conventions operate as far as number releases. And we just wanted to start acting in a more professional, big corporate style convention because we're trying to attract not just sponsors, but also in the way that we approach industry in Japan. They look at it not as unique, but as turnstile. So when we go over there, we want them to be familiar with our numbers. So we don't have to say, well, this is our number, but this is the number you guys really need. So that's what the first thing on that. The second thing is that we are expecting a growth spurt this year. Miku did help with that along with quite a few of the other guests as well. For internal numbers, and this is just the way that conventions work, we always... You know, I'm not comfortable giving you a growth amount until the convention's over.
Right.
Because right now we're growing at a very, very, very healthy clip, plus 30%. Hmm. However, it might not finish out that way based upon at-con attendance numbers. So pre-con, we're 30% above where we were last year at this point in time. But, you know, at-con numbers always are the final. So it could be good. But
we're optimistic.
We're very optimistic.
Okay. Well, that's good news. Everyone likes to hear about growth. So is there any, do you think it's just Miku? Is there, I mean, what else would you point to that's got people especially excited? Do you think
Miku, Calafina? Cause I know there was a lot Calafina sold, Miku sold out faster than any event we've ever had.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's the first event to ever completely sell out.
Yeah. I was going to mention that. Normally those things don't sell out and you got to give away the cheap seats to the free kids, right?
Right.
Yep.
So we prefer to refer to them as standby.
Okay.
But yeah, that's pretty much the case. And then Calafina sold out like a week and a half later.
Yeah.
So you know, between the two of them, I think so far those two have been really popular. I don't have numbers on the other acts yet. Their ticket sales just went up this last week, so I don't have complete numbers on those yet. But I think those are driving factors. The Last Exile premiere is a big one.
I think some of the other things that we've done that are a little bit different this year, the cash prizing on
that's a big one
on AMVs. The amount of AMV entries this year, what's it, quadrupled?
No, it hasn't quadrupled, but it's more than it's nearly doubled.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then Masquerade, the large cash prize that we're offering there, has increased a lot of attendance numbers there. We really are trying to drive larger numbers, not just for the success of the convention, but really the success of the industry. We are a nonprofit. We exist as a C6, which is really a mutual benefit, us and the industry. And we're working on getting focused back on that. The industry has really helped us. This year, we've had a lot more participation from some of the bigger companies, as well as, you know, some of our marketing partners have really said, we really want to help you out this year. So we're excited.
At that same time, while we're trying to, you know, help the industry and obviously help ourselves because we do want to continue, mm-hmm. we're also, you know, the focus is the fans as well, because without them, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, and you mentioned when you were on talking about music videos that the cash prize thing is a sort of giving back to the fans concept.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
One specific fan who gets a big check, but yes.
Well, no, it's actually going to be four specific fans.
Oh, okay, my mistake.
One just gets a really big check.
So all this talk of growth and innovation, that brings me to the inevitable subject that we just have to talk about. You guys actually have direct in-market competition this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In the form of AM Squared, which is being run by your buddy and mine, Chase Wang, down in Anaheim. And this is a unique situation that I'm not sure any other major convention has ever had to deal with something like this. And I want to know, what are you thinking about this? How are you handling it? Are you concerned?
You want me to give my answer, then you can give yours?
Sure.
Okay. My answer on it basically is, and I've also, this is the same thing I've said to every industry, you know, Bondi, AIC, everybody I've talked to about it. My viewpoint on it is very simply this. There is room in the market for all of us. There's more than enough fans to go around. There's more than enough support to go around. I think having additional cons is a good thing. Do I think them putting it on the day they put it on was the wisest of maneuvers? No. But if that's where they want to draw their line on the sand, I wish them all the best. I'm not going to help them. I'm not going to hinder them. They want their chance. Let them take it. I'm okay with it. Until they start poaching my staff, which they haven't.
But okay. There you go.
Well, a delicate answer is always appropriate for this question. My direct instructions to the staff are don't mess with them. We are not we're not going to fight with them on any level. They're offering a competing event just like Coca-Cola or Pepsi. It's competition. And people are going to enjoy what they're going to enjoy. We offer different experiences than they do. We offer a different price range than they do. And with that different price range comes different choices. So we like to think it's a better choice. You know, we're not here to snipe at them. We're not here to hinder what they're trying to do. They, like us, mostly, are a group of fans for the industry. We all do this. You know, even as CEO and chairman, I'm a volunteer. I don't make any money out of this. And, you know, neither does 750 of our fellow staffers. We all do this because we want to. I'm in the same thread as Michael. I think that it was not the wisest of choices. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
To put it on the same weekend. I also think there is room for fellow conventions in the LA area, Anaheim, wherever they want to be. I just think that it would have been more appropriate to move it to a weekend before or a weekend after, because not only does it is it detrimental to us, but it also puts the companies as well as the exhibitors in the middle, and really forces them to choose.
And the fans. Because a lot of fans have the option of just hopping in the car and driving down 30 miles to Anaheim, but there's a lot of fans who don't. So they're literally being forced to choose.
Yeah.
And that's...
So. Anyways, I wish Chase the best of luck, and I hope that he does move to a different weekend. in the future, and that he has some success with that. But other than that, good luck.
But you've built into your projections this year, your attendance projections, at least a 20% drop in broke Orange County teenagers, right?
Yeah, but that's being made up for the broke San Diegans broke Bay Areas who are trucking on down. So right. I think it balances out.
Right, yeah. Okay, so are there any guest announcements left? Are there more surprises coming, or are you guys pretty much locked in at this point?
There's a couple left. We're doing one tonight, which is, as I mentioned earlier, was the Last Exile production people. We're getting four members from their team. We will be announcing them in tonight's AX Live.
Well, this show doesn't go up until tomorrow, so you could spill it here if you want.
Actually, I was thinking about that. We had it up earlier, but Mark closed it, so he's got to bring it back up.
Yeah, we'll give it to you. Hold on just a sec for me.
Sure. And then we're in the final lockdown phases of one more guest. We anticipate having that either confirm. Basically, we're waiting on their schedule, and they're trying to get the last minute confirmation on their schedule. And then once we know for sure, yes, they can make it, then we will be announcing either tomorrow or first part of next week, if that one comes through. But after that, we're done.
Okay. All right. So actually, let's chat a little bit about this, about your AX Live initiative. This thing, sure. Do you still call it AX Backstage, or what happened with that?
No. AX Backstage and AX Live are two different animals.
Okay.
AX Backstage was a sort of like a behind the scenes thing that, if I remember correctly, was originally created by Chase. Mm-hmm. And he put a crew together, and they ran around doing, interviews and stuff, and giving people a behind the scenes look of Anime Expo to see, you know, what's going on. And it was a really cool idea. When Chase left, so did it. So, we separate from that, we have AX Live, which is, a weekly live podcast that's hosted currently hosted by Jason Peer, Francis Delgado, and Courtney Kraft. Up until recently, we also had Brian Yang on. Unfortunately, he has moved on to do other things. And it talks about, you know, there's some news about AX in there, but then there's general news about the anime, what's going on in the anime industry, what's going on, new releases, new teasers. There's a section where Francis's section, Toy Box, talks about figures and figure collecting. Everything from, you know, little Figmas and Nendroids to full-on Dolphy ball joint dolls. Then we have our high scores area, which is hosted by, which is presented by Courtney Kraft, who works for G4 in her main job. And she talks about video games and whatnot. Jason, you're in the room. What else am I missing? I know I'm missing a couple things.
Let's go down the list. Anabyte covers all the world in anime and video games. It goes to Toy Box, which is everything in the world of figures. From there you go High Score, which is everything in the world of video games, including trailers and behind-the-scenes notes. You have our fan feed section, which allows for our fans and viewers to come in and chat with us, give us their opinions on what they think we're talking about, if they have any questions about us, about Anime Expo in general. And then from there on, we also have giveaways, we'll do guest announcements, and basically anything that we think would be just enjoyable to do on the show.
That's Jason Peer, by the way. He's one of the hosts.
Right. And so where do people go to watch this? When is it on, I guess?
It's on Thursday nights. The pre-show starts at 6:45. The show itself starts at 7. It usually runs from 7 to 8, though lately, with everything going on, we've been going a little over. We host it on our – we have a StickM. You could also get it at www.anime-expo.org/AX Live. Oh, AX-Live, I apologize. And then after the show, we go through, clean it up and a little bit. And then, you know, for any, you know, like sometimes we'll show video trailers that we can't put up on the YouTube feed. So we'll take those out and then we'll upload it to YouTube after the fact.
Right.
And we also have a couple other shows. Basically, what we're doing is we're creating a bunch of podcasts, SPJA side of things. We're creating a bunch of podcasts to expand what we do and also, you know, give more back to the fans and give more information to the fans. We also have we just recently launched what we call AniView, which is basically an anime review show, which so far consists of mainly myself and Jason. where we review anime. We'll talk about titles that you can stream online legitimately. For example, we've covered Panty Stocking and Garter Belt, High School of the Dead. What else did we cover? Well, as well as stuff that's out on DVD. So we make sure, like Golden Boy, that was a fun one. We make sure to cover legitimate sources, and we tell people where they can get it. So that way, fans are looking for anime rather than having to go, you know, oh, hey, I'm going to go torrent this, you know, new anime. We can say, hey, why do that when you can go here and watch it legitimately?
Yeah. Okay, cool. So these are all SPJA branded, and it's kind of designed to give you something to do in the off months, maybe a little bit.
Damn it, you caught us.
So part of it is we had a project back in the day, and it's been a number of years, called EX. And it was basically a somewhat marketing, but really just continued fulfillment of our mission statement to support the industry through supporting Japanese culture. We're trying to revive that. It's a number of things. It's articles that are written by writers, obviously, that cover anything from, like Michael talked about, the newest anime series, how to build a particular cosplay outfit, press releases from different companies, that kind of thing. So we're trying to revive EX as a separate project from Anime Expo to provide us, yes, with something to do outside of Anime Expo, but also to continuously throughout the year support the industry and really give something to the fans. That's what we're here for. So
you guys are the SPJA. You're the Society for the Promotion of Japanese Animation. You run the biggest anime convention in the country. And it's
In North America.
And it's 2011, and just now you're starting back. You're starting into podcasts and articles and reviews online.
Well, we actually started the podcast last year, but yeah.
Right. Okay. So, well, here's my question. Like, do you feel like you're a little late to the party? Because I can tell you, like, these are overserved audiences at this point.
True.
And we agree with you to some extent. We have a large following. That's one of the bigger differences for us, is we already have a built-in audience.
Right.
That we're trying to, you know, provide continuous sources of information for. Yes, it is 2011. But EX actually started in the 90s.
No, I'm familiar with EX. I used to read it back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we're trying to bring it back. We had a great response then. It kind of fell down, and we want to pick it back up and run with it a little bit further, hopefully a lot further, but we're trying it out. We really, Zach, it's not that we want to poach any other audiences. It's that people come to our website and spend a whole lot of time. what they're looking at, yes, we know, but part of knowing what they're looking at is they want more information about anime. They want more information about manga. And they want more information where they can purchase it. And we're trying to fulfill that for them and for the industry.
Right, okay. So you're trying to be more than just an anime convention for your built-in audience.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
And hey, if we happen to build a media empire in the way, why not?
Good luck.
Watch out, Leo Laporte. We're coming for you.
That's not our end goal.
I'm joking. I'm joking.
That's really not our end goal.
That was Kevin Rose Ramp. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, Dignation. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get to Twitter questions here.
Okay.
I got a couple for you. Let's see here. We covered this a little bit earlier, but maybe you can go into a little bit more detail on it. Itoju asks, is it true that the industry guests involved in the actual production of animation really don't draw much of a crowd at conventions anymore?
We haven't found that to be the case. With a lot of the, for our event anyway, we've had, you know, it depends on the show. A really popular show like Bleach or Black Lagoon, we're packing the walls. For some of your lesser-known titles, not as much. But we found that they actually have a pretty good draw.
Okay, so in your experience, by and large, you haven't seen the giant, pretty much drop in interest from the because I can tell you at other cons, maybe it's not quite as much at AX, but other cons, you know, you walk into, you know, the director of the Helsing anime is sitting in a panel room and it's less than half full. Actually, I believe that was at AX one year.
I remember that. That was LP2 at
Anaheim.
2006.
Yeah, it was Anaheim.
Yeah, that was in Anaheim. And that room was full.
It was full. Okay, my memory is faulty. But you know what I'm talking about. Surely you've seen it.
Yes, at some we places. Do understand. Right. And that's actually, well, there's two things on that. We want to bring anime that is popular to the United States and really get it more exposure so it become more popular. But we also want to get ahead of the curve and really provide some exposure for some anime that's really good or some manga that might not yet have a following. And one of the ways that we can do that is make them a guest at our convention so that, you know, one of the ways that, quite frankly, I or Michael or a lot of the people on our staff will discover new things is we'll find out about it when we're in Japan, when we're getting pitched, hey, bring this person to the United States. And then we'll watch their series or listen to their music and go, holy crap, this is really good. Let's do it.
And, case in point, Calafina.
Yeah, Calafina is a prime example of that, where it's amazing music. It's really going to be a fantastic show, but they might not yet have an audience here.
Or a large one.
Or a large one. And we want to give them that chance to be exposed. That's one of the benefits that we have of being a larger convention, where, yes, we'll have the super high popularity guests, but we can also bring guests that aren't as popular yet.
Up-and-comers.
Yeah, up-and-comers.
Also, something to keep in mind is I think one of the reasons we haven't noticed as much of a drop as, say, other cons have is for the longest time, that was Anime Expo's, for lack of a better term, claim to fame, was for the longest time, all we brought were Japanese guests. We didn't bring any American guests. So we were known as, you know, if you want to see Japanese guests for these anime, then Expo's the place to go. We've recently added in the American domestic goes as well. And yeah, their rooms are packed to the gills. But we still have the reputation of bringing good Japanese guests as well. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't noticed it as much.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
And lastly, I will kind of equate it to old school anime. We are one of the few conventions that does have an old school anime track. You're not going to get as big of an audience for that room as you would for, you know, the newest High School of the Dead, what they're putting out. But we, again, like to show this is our core. This is what started us, and this is, you know, as an old timer, damn it, you kids should appreciate this.
You kids get off my animated lawn.
And it's really an honor for us to be able to put up those guests that, yeah, they might not draw as big of a crowd, but we really want to promote them. So we're here.
And we also want to, you know, say, hey, you guys have a following. You have fans. Please make more.
Yes.
You know, that makes me wonder, brings up another question. Having been to Anime LA, which is kind of the only other anime convention in Los Angeles. Anime LA, in addition to PMX, sort of the only other anime convention in the area. Mm-hmm. And I usually drop by on that weekend. And their attendance, and this is anecdotal, but a lot of other people agreed with me on this. Their attendance, it seemed like the average age of an attendee at Anime LA is like 35, 40. It is an old schooler con. A lot of the old folks... go to that one, and old timer fans. Do you have any information, like your demographics, in terms of like how many old timers is AX actually retaining?
We retain quite a few. I don't mean to step on Chaz. Chaz runs Anime LA. He's a great guy. I think part of the reason that they get the old timer crowd is that's kind of Chaz's crowd. He's old school fandom convention runner, and he. You know, he gets a lot of support from his friends and people that he's worked with in the past. You know, a great example is Mr. Hands that he has every year as a guest.
Oh, Tadao.
Yeah, Tadao. And that's just part of his thing. As far as AX goes, we have so many attendees that we attract quite a few old people. You know, be it parents or people that are, you know, just old school anime fans. That if anything, that audience is actually growing at AX like it did last year. I think it was up like 3%, and that's the over 30 crowd, as we call it. So we are seeing it grow, but it's not growing as strongly as our younger crowd is.
Okay. All right. Teruinu asks, what is the process for getting exclusive showings like world premieres and stuff?
Oh, that's a good question. Using The Last Exile as an example, literally, we got a call from Funimation saying, hey, we were talking to Gonzo And Gonzo's getting ready to do this new super secret ultra cool title, and they want to premiere it at your event. Are you interested? Oh, by the way, we can't tell you what it is until we know if you're interested or not. And we're like, it's Gonzo. Of course we're interested.
Really?
Like, okay, well, you can't talk about this right now. This is before we announce, obviously. We're like, okay, what is it? And they're like, Last Exile 2. We're like, oh my God, cool. Yes, we want to do it. So sometimes that's what happens. In other cases, we reach out to, you know, our contacts, you know, because we go to Japan, we send a team to Japan twice a year. We go for Tokyo Anime Fair, which didn't happen this year, but we still send a team a little later. And we go for TIM and TIFCOM, which are media events, media sales conventions in Tokyo in October. And we meet with our contacts at the companies. We walk up with them. We say, hey, how you doing? You know, thank you for all your support. What do you guys have coming up? Is there anything we can help you promote? And oftentimes they'll come up to us and say, hey, yeah, we've got, you know, XYZ coming down the pipe. And, you know, yes, we'd very much like to promote it. So it's mostly building the relationship with the companies, taking the time to get to know them, taking the time to build those relationships, treat them well, and treat them with respect. And it just goes from that.
So how much does your personal taste dictate what you decide to accept as, because, you know, if Funimation came to you and said, hey, we've got we've got an exclusive, it's going to be this big hot show, and they name like a studio that maybe isn't quite as thought of quite as well. I would argue maybe Gonzo would be one of those studios that has maybe a poor reputation at this point. But do you ever reject anything? Do you ever get shown like a trailer and go, eh, maybe not for AX?
Yeah, we are approached by certain companies that does take place. And sometimes it's one where it's just that's, you know, that production is not yet to the point where we feel comfortable putting it as a premiere at AX. Because we want to be able to honor them and show a top quality project completion at the convention so that it looks good, not just for us, but really for them.
We don't want to do them a disservice.
Yeah, we don't want to put something out for them that's not yet fully baked and, you know, kind of disparage their name in the United States. So it does happen. We do turn stuff down, yes.
All right. Okay. From NetStrike, any plans in making Anime Expo a better online experience for those who can't be there, like live panel coverage, etc.?
Live panel coverage, not at this point. It is something we have talked about and we are considering. We're in the process of negotiating streaming for events again this year. So,
we're working with two separate companies this year to stream both domestically and internationally for the convention, not just opening and closing ceremonies for the exhibit hall, but some of the panels. So there will be some streaming of panels, but it's not going to be everything.
We're kind of sticking our toes in the water there.
Yeah.
Okay. Any plan on like streaming the masquerade or whatever?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Because I think that's like what people would want to see.
And we did that last year too. So we're definitely doing that again this year.
Okay. Probably don't want to give people too much of an incentive to not come to the show.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, no, trust me, you're not going to be able to see the quality as well in person as you will in a grainy bitstream feed. You know?
Well, yeah, and the other thing is that doing that, it does take away some of the specialness for the attendees.
Yeah.
You know, if they streamed everything, every single panel from San Diego Comic-Con, I guarantee you their attendance would drop crazy.
Yeah. Hey, but maybe you'd actually be able to make it across the from one end of the market, the exhibits room to the other in less than 3 hours,
or you know, attend the show at all because it's virtually it's almost impossible to get tickets to that thing. I had friends that wanted to go this year, and I was like, okay, you got to be up at 8 o'clock in the morning. They're gonna release tickets. You got 10 minutes, you know, and they're like, look, this is way too much of a pain in the ass to go to a comic book convention. I'm like, ah, I know. All right, J.R. Namanich. Bluntly asks, with a competing convention in town, why should people go to your con?
Because we have a whole lot of cool stuff.
Okay, compelling answer.
Look at our webpage. You know, if a person looks at our page or looks at our lineup of what we've got, and looks at the lineup of what AM Squared's got, and they say, you know, if they like what AM Squared's got better, please go where you want to go. We're not going to hold a gun to your head and say, come to our con or we shoot the puppy. We're not going to do that. You know, it's a case of we want them to go where they will be happiest. We think we've got a lot of really cool stuff this year. I mean, Miku alone is an awesome example of that. But yeah, they need to go where they would be happiest.
For me, Zach, it's really an answer of we just have more to offer. Our exhibit hall is probably 400% bigger. There's more attendance, which means more people to shoot photos of for cosplay. There's larger and more guests. Our dance is in a professional. We spend almost $100,000 to rent Club Nokia, so we can really put on the best dance at any anime convention anywhere. That's one. Nokia Theater. You cannot. Besides maybe New York, there is not a better venue for Masquerade as far as performances go. And that goes also with our musical performances. There is just a far, it's just a far different category, a far different level of performance at Anime Expo. It costs you a bit more to attend, yes, but we really think that we're offering a higher caliber product. So, and we would like our attendees to really back that up. Come and check it out. And if you'd like, please go check out AM2. It's free to attend. Please go check out their convention. And then we will let our attendees and really our fans make up their mind on their own.
You know, you could have just said carpeting. Carpeting in the exhibit hall.
Okay, carpeting.
Carpeting in the exhibit hall. How about that?
Okay, guys. Well, listen, that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about the show. I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to it, myself included. And we'll see you there.
All right.
We look forward to seeing you too, Zach. Thanks for the interview.
Okay, everybody, that's our show. Big thanks to Michael and Mark for coming on by. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivision.net. While you're at iTunes, don't forget to leave us a review or a response or something. We'd appreciate it. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.